Harper Audio presents Don't Look Twice by Andrew Gross, performed by Christian Hoff. Part 1. Chapter 1. Mango Meltdown or Berry Blast? Ty Hawk scanned the shelves of the Exxon station's refrigerated cooler. Whatever, his 13-year-old daughter Jessie responded with a shrug, her eyes alighting on something more appealing.
What about this?
Powie Zowie. Hawk reached inside and read the brightly colored label. Mega jolt of caffeine? Highest bang for the buck?
Your mother lets you drink this stuff?
He asked, skeptically. Jessie looked back at him.
Mom's not exactly here, is she?
No, Hawk nodded, meeting her gaze. I guess she's not. In just the past year, forbidding new curves had sprung up on his daughter's once childlike body. Bra straps peeking out from under her tank top. Jeans clinging to the hips in an unnatural way. Gangly suddenly morphing into something a bit more in the range of troubling. Not to mention the newly mastered repertoire of eye rolls, shrugs, and exaggerated sighs. Hawk wondered if the request for an ankle tattoo or a belly piercing could be far behind. You don't get to win, a friend who had teenage daughters once warned him. You only delay. Jesus, he recalled. It was just a year ago that she liked to get shoulder rides from me. Toss it in the basket, he said, acquiescing. One. Jessie shrugged without even the slightest smile, failing to grasp the significance of his offering.
Okay.
At the end of the aisle, a man in a green down vest and tortoiseshell glasses reached into the cooler and met Hawk's gaze. His amused, empathetic smile seemed to say, "Know exactly what you're going through, man." Hawk grinned back. A year had passed since the Grand Central bombing. A year since the events set in motion by the hit-and-run accident down on Putnam Avenue had thrust Hawk out of his long slumber and into the public eye. In that year, Hawk had been on the morning news shows and MSNBC and Greta Van Susteren, the case rocking not just the tall iron gates of the Loire-styled mansions out on North Avenue, but the financial circles in New York as well. It had turned Hawk into a bit of reluctant celebrity, the object of friendly ribbing from his staff and the local merchants along the avenue. Even his old hockey buddies, who used to tip their mugs to him because of how he once tore up the football league at Greenwich High, now joked about whether he knew Paris or Nicole or could get them past the bouncers into some fancy new club in the city on a Saturday night. Finally, Hawk just had to step back, get his life in order, and keep things on a steady keel with Karen, whose husband's death had been at the heart of the case, and with whom he had fallen in love. At first, it had been hard to bridge all the differences between them. She was rich. Hawk was the head of detectives on the local force. Their families' lifestyles didn't exactly merge, not to mention all the attention the case had generated, that in solving the mystery of her husband's death, Hawk had unleashed something buried and now restless inside her. In the past year, her father, Mel, had taken ill with Parkinson's. Her mother wasn't handling it well. Karen had gone down to Atlanta to help take care of him, with her daughter away at Tufts, and her son, Alex, now 16, recruited to play lacrosse at an upstate prep school. It had been a year in which Hawk had finally learned to put much of the pain of his own past behind him, to learn to feel attached again, to fight for someone he wanted. He knew Karen loved him deeply for what he had done for her. Still, a lot of things stood in the way, not just the money thing or their different families and backgrounds. Lately, Hawk had detected something in her, a restlessness, maybe a sense of wanting to finally be free after being tied to a man her whole adult life, one who had so painfully deceived her. It was always a roll of the dice, they both knew, how things might work out between them. The jury was still out. "Come on," he said to Jess. "Grab some M&Ms. The boat's waiting."